The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. We're in the midst of an educational crisis today, and students are the hope of the world for industry, art, science, literature in the world tomorrow. The students who are going to become the leaders of all of the fantastic, glittering, glamour world that science and industry says is reserved for us in the years ahead, and toward whom we look to bail us out of the inextricable problems of this day and age right now. The question is, are these students going to deliver us and bail us out of the inextricable problems we face? Will the boys and girls of the colleges and universities of this nation and around the world today deliver us from the problem of food wars in India, worldwide famine, the population explosion, the problems of our polluted and overcrowded cities, the fantastic racial problems, the religious problems, the economic and political problems of the world? Can you take a cross-section or a survey of campuses around the world and answer the question, will the students of today's educational institutions become the leaders of the world tomorrow to radically alter the course of nations and of the entirety of the earth and to bring us world peace at last? Well, when you look into the facts about what's happening in colleges and universities, it's a little bit shocking and a little bit appalling because we're in the midst of an educational crisis today. It began pretty much with the space race and the fantastic thought that frightened Americans so much that we were maybe years behind the Russians in space exploration and in the race to the moon. And so there has been a fantastic interest in science, technology, mathematics, and yet at the same time something has been happening in colleges and universities around the country because now more and more students are dropping out, becoming disillusioned. And when you look into the aims and the goals of college students as to why they go to college, what are they studying? What are their goals? What are their purposes? What do they hope to achieve after the university? It's a little bit frustrating. In this decade, unless the trend has radically changed, an appalling one-third of United States students will not finish high school. And the dropout remains the most ignored problem of U.S. education. You've heard about the dropouts. Al Capp has characterized some of them. He calls them swine. And that means, in short, students wildly indignant about nearly everything. And we heard the sensational cases of what happened at Berkeley in California. We hear the cases now, even Sukarno's got his hands full, and in this case, thankfully, with anti-communism for a change instead of the other way around. Of school dropouts, of students, and around the world, it's students that you hear of doing the rioting. Students in Tokyo, students in Africa, in California, or Florida, or Maine, or New Hampshire, or Vermont. Now, what's happening? What is there about these academic institutions of ours that causes students to go rampant and to riot? What causes dropouts? What causes early disillusionment? What causes all the failure? And above all, why is suicide the second cause of death among college-age men and women today? You know, leaving school has nearly always proved to be just one more step in a treadmill of doubt and discouragement that leads toward utter economic failure and, of course, a place in a society that is bottom rung. And, of course, oftentimes leads toward escapades and scrapes of the law. Now, a UPI release said recently that a crop of college freshmen, 18% higher than last year, has pushed college enrollment to a record 5.9 million. And that figure announced by the U.S. Office of Education was 12% higher last fall than in 1964. It more than doubles the college enrollment of just 10 short years ago. More than double. Now you take a look at this massive of the educational institutions and you ask, what do they go there for? What are they getting in the classrooms? You follow them from the football field or the basketball gymnasium or auditorium into the classroom and find out, what are they studying? What kind of men and women are they becoming? What are the hopes for the future? Because our 50 and 60 year olds in another 10 years are going to be 60 and 70. 70 and 80 year olds are going to be 80 or 90, or if they are still alive, they will probably be thinking of going into retirement or something else. And these decades go whipping by so rapidly, and we live in a world of such fantastic proportions, such frightening change, and such awesome, insoluble problems, it's time you began to wonder, what about the hope of the future? What about the bright young leaders of tomorrow? The Daily Oklahoman of October 29, 1964, it's a while back, came up with a report on why students go to college. And it was discovered that more than half of the boys and girls who go to college go for fun. And they admitted this cheerfully themselves, for football games, for social life, fraternities, sororities, and not for academic reasons whatsoever. In fact, not even one in five college freshmen list the pursuit of knowledge and the cultivation of the intellect as their primary reason for wanting a college education. These are some of the findings of a comprehensive survey of college students now being conducted by the Educational Testing Service and revealed by the president of that service, Dr. Henry Chauncey. And he said more than 13,000 freshmen at 23 public and private colleges were asked recently to list their priority reasons for going to college. And the doctor said that 51% of the freshmen want college for, quote, collegiate, end quote, reasons. Now, this reflects the mores of our society, he said, in which having a good time over the weekend is one of the most important parts of life. In addition to the 19% who go to college for academic reasons, 26% said they prepare for a career or a profession by going to college. Only 26. Now, another 4% were nonconformists or beatniks who have individualistic characteristics and interests and are, quote, searching for meaning in life, according to Dr. Chauncey. And they're going to college to do it. Now, are they finding the meaning of life in college? Well, let's go a little further and answer that question by noting that suicide, which is the 10th highest killer in the United States, is second only to accidents as the cause of death among United States college students. And depressed adolescents are taking their own lives in ever-increasing numbers. At Cornell University, Dr. Leif Broughton said in a new study of college students, suicides can be applied to high school and elementary students as well. Young people, most frequently those with high IQs, have a desire to destroy themselves because they can no longer tolerate the discrepancy between how they appear to themselves and how they would like to appear, what they would like to be. Now, students have been warned by theologians and by philosophers and professors and those who have conducted commencement ceremonies not to expect to enter college to try to find some magical book that is marked with an X that tells them the meaning and the purpose in life. And yet, can you say that anyone is truly educated if he does not know the purpose of human existence? If he doesn't know the reason for drawing breath, if he doesn't know why he himself is alive, if the colleges and the universities are not teaching students what they are, why they live, where they are going, if the colleges and universities can't teach our young people what is the purpose of human experience and where is this old world of ours going, then can it be said they are truly disseminating the kind of education these students so badly need? Got a letter the other day from a 13-year-old boy. 13, just barely into teenage. And he said he'd heard over the radio that 33% of all Americans admit they don't know what they're living for. Now, this is not only true of college students, but of people in government, and certainly theologians are saying that they are the most muddled and confused of all. And don't think I don't have a quotation for that. I used it on a program just recently, where a theologian said, we've got to search, and we're the most muddled and confused of all. And this was in his own words, not mine. So here's a little 13-year-old boy whose voice hasn't even started to change yet. And listen to his letter. He said, I heard over the radio that 33% of all Americans admitted they don't know what they're living for. I don't know what the percentage is in Great Britain of the people who don't know why they're alive, or of South Africa, or of Australia, or the Philippines. But I imagine the percentages are pretty well equal, because in this island of affluency and plenty, in the midst of a world of hunger and fear, if the Americans, who have a little more of some of the goods and services they think go to make life happier, and still don't know why they're alive, then what about people who are starving half to death in India? And what about people who don't have quite that amount of affluency over in Australia and in Great Britain, even though they enjoy a great deal more than the Indians do? Now, he said, in fact, I don't know what I'm living for. At age 13, I go to school and I get in trouble for shooting spitballs. I said, other kids shoot at me and I can't just sit there and get hit. If I tell the teacher, the kids will get me outside. Then I come home and get yelled at because I slop food like a 2-year-old, and even though I try to do everything well, it just turns out terrible. My grades, he said, drop because I have a bigger interest in religion than I do in my schoolwork. Then people start calling me retarded. I'm just plain tired of living at 13 years, and he said, if you print my letter, please don't use my name. Please use Reader. Now, here's a boy who's afraid that his friends and others are going to find out he wrote a letter and he'll be persecuted for having it appear in the magazine. Here's a boy who's afraid not to shoot spitwads because, well, if he doesn't, he's going to sit there as a target and they'll pick on him till doomsday. And if he does, the teacher's going to get him. And if he squeals on the kids, they'll get him outside. And he's finding already that the sort of an animalistic, depraved, bestial human nature that we all have is pretty hard to tolerate sometimes. And here's a kid that says, I'm just plain tired of living. He says, I've had it. I can't take it anymore. That's it for me. And he's 13 years of age. To him, it's spitwads, slopping his food, and being called retarded. Other people have more high-sounding reasons for being tired of living, but it sums up pretty much into the same thing. They're disgusted with themselves and disgusted with people around them. And they don't know why they're alive. They don't know what the purpose is in this human existence. They don't know where they're going. And they're pretty sure there isn't any special place they can go to find out. They're pretty much hoodwinked by a lot of people telling you can't find any real truth, that there isn't any absolute, and there's no positive source of knowledge to which you can go. And so they say, well, who am I? It's just my opinion. They cover themselves by saying, well, here's what I think, or I suppose, or I believe, or this is my philosophy. But they don't know where to go to find the answers as to who they are and what they are. Now, people have a lot of pet philosophies about themselves. A lot of people think they know themselves real well. And this is one of the biggest errors of all. There are millions of people alive today who think they really know themselves. And they're anxious to tell each other, to tell you, oh, I know myself, they say. Well, this, of course, is one of the biggest fallacies of all. Now, at the risk of being scoffed at for mentioning the Bible is a book you can prove to yourself one way or the other. The Bible stands proved. And the Bible doesn't say, take me for granted. The Bible says, prove me now herewith. And over in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul wrote, prove all things, hold fast that which is good. And in Isaiah, in the Old Testament, you will read to the law and the testimony, if they speak not according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. Now, the Bible prophesied that the Bible would not be believed, that it would be scoffed at, that people would reject it, and that the broad majority of people certainly would not be living by it or paying attention to it today. So now that we have that understanding out of the way, I'm not saying you need to believe the Bible because I tell you to or that the Bible tells you to. The Bible says prove all things, but most people aren't willing to do this. And the Bible does say that the human mind is deceitful above all things. There is nothing that is any more two-faced. There is nothing that is any more completely, contradictory and completely, totally rebellious and carnal than the human mind. And human nature is expounded and explained in the Bible as being above all things, self-deceiving. Wanting the self to be in a certain image, to appear in a certain way, desperately striving to make it appear that way. Oh, I suppose there's a nagging worry in all of this that we don't quite appear that way. You can call that an inferiority complex, and psychologists and psychiatrists claim to understand some of the human psyche and some of our motivations and all the rest. What they really understand is nowhere near as much as what they don't understand, which they themselves oftentimes will admit. But there are millions of people alive who think they know themselves. And this is one of the biggest fallacies of all. Because unless you go to the one source of knowledge that says, thy word is truth, and it is the foundation of all knowledge. But most people aren't going to do that because they don't think that's what the Bible is, and they are biased, they are bigoted, they are prejudiced, and their minds are closed on the subject. Now that sounds shocking, but that's true. The Bible speaks to people who received not the love of the truth. And there is such a thing as love of truth. But that has to be a little bit bigger than self-love. And self-love is pretty much deceiving too, because people are in love with themselves, and that's why they think they know themselves, when really they don't. They're not willing to admit that they themselves are deceived about themselves. Well, never before have our colleges been so jammed. Never before have there been so many young hopefuls to take
their place in this glittering world of ours of science, industry, and technology. And never before have we had so many of them crowded onto psychologists' couches. And never before have so many of them been committing suicide. And never before have so many of them said, we don't know where to go to get the answers, and we're pretty sure there aren't any anyhow, so why look? Now, according to an Harvard psychiatrist, he is, Dr. Preston Munter, he says that in leading colleges, the gap between intellectual and emotional maturity in adolescence is probably being widened. There is evidence that many of the most exceptional students are among the most immature. And he said the psychologists have found that the modern collegian suffers anxiety and tension because of cutthroat academic competition, worries about lopsided intellectual development, and is uncertain about moral standards. They're certain of one thing today, is most of them are anyhow, they don't think there should be any of those. They don't believe there ought to be any moral standards at all, and they are troubled about the future, that's for sure. At Columbia, the number of students in the college applying for psychological help has quadrupled in the last 4 years to 12.7% of the total enrollment. Can you imagine that? More than 1 out of 10 of those students have applied for psychological help. They want to go and have the, as you say, head scratcher or the brain picker research through the inner labyrinth of their own private reasonings and try to help find out what's loose in there, what's wrong with them, what's troubling them. Psychological counseling at Harvard has become so commonplace that students refer to their health service, directed by a Dr. Dana Farnsworth, as the Farnsworth Hilton. Yale has 11 full-time and 9 part-time professionals in its mental hygiene clinic. How about that? Full-time and part-time professionals operating clinics that are jammed and with people waiting in line to get on the leather couch and are going to college, but they're so bugged, they're so excited, they're so confused, so disillusioned by what they find in their books and what they're told by their professors, that they just don't know what to make of it. And before they can face another class in the humanities, the social sciences, or maybe psychology itself, they need to take a trip to the psychologist or the psychiatrist and find out what's wrong with them. Sort of amazing. Now, here were some statements about students, about the future. These kids who go to the couch are really worried that this may be the last generation of man. And a lot of them would like to get theirs while the getting is good and then duck out right quick if they possibly can, maybe even by suicide. Now, that's shocking. That ought to worry and bother a few people. This was a poll taken by a major New York newspaper in which reporters surveyed the feelings of college and university students within that particular city. And the students were asked, what is their major worry? What bothers them the most? And almost ritualistically, automatically, the answer came back just like this. Nothing bothers me. But then the questioners were persistent, and so they kept saying, now, come on, I'm not trying to get you to spill something here on anybody. I just want a really a sincere answer. What really bothers you? So after 1 or 2 or 3 hours, these questioners revealed, and they'd been trained in a little bit of psychology themselves, all of the bristling self-efficiency and everything else sort of fell away. And underneath, here's what some of them said. A girl of 17, she said, I'm afraid that everything I believe in is going to crumble. A Brooklyn sophomore who was 20 said, I find myself tense more than just casually. As the pressure gets greater, more of us will tend to crack like little cracks in a big wall. Now, overtly or covertly, the students of today are persuaded that theirs is and may well be the last generation of mankind. And they're pretty well convinced of their impotency in influencing or altering this aspect of destiny. They don't think they can change the course of world affairs. They don't think they can solve the problems that their elders have left for them. And so they try to detach themselves from the implications of the big problems. Oh, sure, they're rebellious. Oh, sure, we've got leaders and we've got marches and sit-ins and chain-ins and walk-ins and lie-ins and all the rest of it. But it doesn't solve anything. And usually when you talk to them, they are woefully uninformed about the overall aspects of the world and conditions upon it. So they try to detach themselves from the really serious implications and deal with one thing at a time. They're not happy with the world, they know that. They're dissatisfied with their elders, they know that. They're not happy with various governmental policies, some of them, and they know that. They're not happy with academic administration, they're not happy with school government, and they're not too terribly excited, for that matter, about church, school, police, or anything that smacks of authority. This they know. And so what's happening today, you find youths concentrating almost wholly on the things that excite them the most, which, of course, are the ball games and various meetings that have to do with policies of government, maybe grades, dating. They concentrate ferociously on these things they feel they can control. Something that is out of their control, they're tending to run away from it. Now, at the very same time, there is an impulse to rush forward and capture all of the thrills and the chills and the excitement that life has to offer. As one co-ed, 18, put it, "I want to get married and have children before anything happens." Another one said, "Well, I want to get to Europe this year if I can, because who knows whether there will be a Europe around next year or not." On the whole, they will turn their noses up at bomb shelters. As one sophomore said, "Well, we might as well die with a bomb, because what's going to be left? A bunch of people like animals fighting for whatever is left after the last little explosion has taken place, and the last food and water and shelter will be divided up among those who are left, so we might as well all die." Listen to their songs. Hopeless songs, songs of frustration and defeat, a wail or a moan or a dirge that is self-effacing and self-defeating. And you hear all of the terrible, mournful cries in these songs, like, "Help me," or "I want to hold your hand," you know, or something, because I'm afraid and I'm worried. And that's exactly the attitude. Now, put it in its proper perspective, because these are the ones we look for to eradicate the difficulties of the world, to solve the population explosion, to get over all of the things educationally and all the problems of religion, of all the different religions and what they have to say about birth control and so on. These are the people who are the leaders of government, of art, literature, industry, science, of theology, and of the military in the world that is coming. How are we doing with them? What are we teaching them? Just what are their values? What do they know about themselves? Not enough, that's for sure. Now, discussing the really big needs of science and technology and relating it to college educations, a leading scientist on the West Coast said, "We need to produce about twice the number of PhDs each year than we're producing now in the mathematical and physical and engineering sciences. We have the problem of people having to keep up. The world is changing so fast that almost nothing you learned in college does you much good 10 years later. And do you know what today's educated college or university graduate is being called? He's being called the new barbarian. That's right, the new barbarian. The specialist who is trained, but uneducated. Technically skilled, but culturally incompetent. And Dr. David Truman, who was dean at Columbia, and the men's undergraduate liberal arts school at Columbia University, New York City, gave a speech in which he said these people are an absolute menace. He called them the educated illiterate of the world. His speech was made before 200 alumni of Columbia, their friends and families, and he insisted his indictment by no means applied only to scientists and technicians, but he said students in liberal arts fields too often concentrate solely on one narrow area of specialization at the expense of a broad education. Well, just what is the real goal of education? Education has been defined as the attempt by the older generation to foist upon or to insert into the minds of, to in some way or another make sure that the younger generation imbibes and absorbs its tenets, its philosophies, its religion, its ideals, its goals, its founding principles, its system, its economic system and principles, everything that has to do with the makeup of that particular nation. Now, real quickly, without going into a lot of history, suffice it to say, you ought to know that history is taught totally differently in Germany about World War II than it is in the United States. The little Japanese boys and girls learn a different story about how World War II got started than we do in the United States or than you do in Great Britain. And the people in communist countries say they invented the steamboat, not Robert Fulton. Histories have been rewritten 3 times in several decades in Russia. Now, let that suffice. We know that different societies educate different people to believe different things. The point is, what is the truth, and who is right, and how can you prove it, and where is that one source of knowledge to which you can go that gives you the positive truths, that gives you the entire scope of human experience, that gives you the answers to who are we, what are we, why are we alive, where are we going, what is ahead for this world? Students admit they're not finding that in the educational institutions of this world. They admit they're frustrated and disillusioned and a candidate for the leather couch. Well, I can tell you of 3 institutions where that exact knowledge of what this world is all about, of what human life is all about, of why we are, why we draw breath, where we're going, of the real good outcome, the good news beyond, of just where humanity is going. I know of three educational institutions, three campuses, where that exact knowledge is being disseminated, because we do not throw to the ground the very foundation of all knowledge. We do not try to answer with a vague guess why it is we're on a round earth and subject to laws, forces, and energies which we did not begin and which do need to be sustained. But we very carefully, systematically, and academically pursue the questions: where did life come from? What is the origin of the universe? What is man? What is he? Just an accident of some cosmic offshoot of some original force of some type? Or does he belong on this earth, and is this his spaceship on his journey through the universe, and is it so perfectly conditioned for his environment for a great purpose, and is there something beyond at the end of this journey? I know three colleges where that exact information is disseminated, and those are Ambassador College campuses. Any of you that are of college age or high school age, and I might state real quickly that we have, I forget off the cuff the exact percentage, but I think it is something about 30%, 40% or more of our entering students who have come to Ambassador Colleges for a liberal arts education, 4 years coeducational liberal arts education, who already have had a degree from another educational institution. And this includes people with master's degrees from Oxford and Harvard, and with master's degrees from UCLA and from universities all over the United States, and for that matter abroad. Now, if you are of high school age or of college age and you're contemplating further education, and you're wondering about this huge treadmill, like the kid at Berkeley who said the only time he got noticed is when he spindled his IBM card, and you're wondering about campuses where the accent is on how to live instead of how to earn a living, and why are you alive instead of how to maybe keep alive by jerking the rug out from under the boss and going into science or technology, and where you want to find about true education and what are the real bases, what are the real facts, what are the real platforms upon which true education should be based. Discover what you are. Come to know yourself completely and thoroughly. First of all, find out why you draw breath. Not like this little 13-year-old boy who says, I'm plain tired of living at my age. If you want to find out, then you need to write for information to the address which I will give you about Ambassador Colleges. Now, if your name is on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine, you will be getting articles on education, and you'll be getting straight-from-the-shoulder information just like it's disseminated in college classrooms, except, of course, not as technically and not as thoroughly. In the Plain Truth magazine that has to do with the way this world really is, with admitting the facts the way they are, and then answering the questions, where do we go from here? Here in the current number is an article on drought is here now. Here we are trying to feed a starving world. Can we make it? Our resources are dwindling rapidly. Are we going to be able to feed India and keep them from starving to death? They're having food riots and demonstrations right now. Here's another article on the beet generation, and it has to do with education. Here's a girl that said, would you please send me one of your hairs? A letter to the Beatles. How about that one? What is this beet way of life? Why? What's happening in this purposeless search for thrills and chills by teenagers who have no sense of direction in life? This article answers that question. Other articles and features, every number, and it's in full color now, 52 pages, no advertising, and no request for money if you send your name and address to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Remember to tell us also that you want information about the colleges if you're of college or high school age. The address again in just a moment. This literature is free of charge. There is no price. And so until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.